morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths that are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here is to understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while viewing how these events will shape our world. Then, during our second hour, we will return to engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, we'll be able to replace any vestiges we may have of religion and with reason engage in a relationship with Him. Our phone number that will be available to you over the next 2 hours, toll-free, 877-300-7645. I'm going to go through some items that I've plucked from the news over these last weeks that kind of got pushed down the list in priorities with the events unfolding around the world. But one of the things that caught my eye is that Tibetan monks, it says two in this particular article, but it's actually a series of them, I think close to 100 over the last maybe 2 or 3 years, have set themselves on fire. The monks typically aged 20 to 23, in other words, not fully developed in terms of their capacity to exercise good judgment, set themselves on fire at a monastery in Tibet and told the Radio Free Asia that they were doing so for political and religious reasons. This monastery has been the focal point of protests in recent months. Yeah, I was right. More than 100, this article says, Tibetans, mostly young monks, have set themselves ablaze since 2011, many fatally, in apparent protest against Chinese rule. Now, I am, as should most people be, wholly and completely opposed to Muslims choosing to blow themselves up while killing others. If a Muslim wants to kill themselves, so be it. If a religious individual wants to kill themselves, it's a shame, it's a tragedy, it's a waste of a life. But if they want to burn themselves up alive, if they think that is an appropriate response, if they think that is the best way to effectively communicate their message, that is their choice. And so long as they're not torching anybody else in the process, so be it. I personally am not opposed to people having the right to commit suicide. Tragic waste of life. It's kind of like using drugs. If you want to squander your brain by using drugs, if you want to approach life handicapped because of what you have ingested, that's your choice. So long as you don't jump in a car and threaten others while you're under the influence, whatever you do to destroy yourself ought to be your own option. But think of just how misguided you have to be. Think about how deluded and delusional you have to be. To either think that strapping explosives and tacks and ball bearings and rat poison to a backpack that you're wearing and exploding yourself and while killing others is doing a service to your God, and that by doing so, you're going to be rewarded with multiple virgins in paradise. Or that as a Buddhist, where the ultimate goal is nothingness, that you should end the only thing that you have that matters, which is your life, by suffering the pain associated with immolation. I just am staggered as to how easily people are bewildered by politics and religion to respond so foolishly, giving away something so precious as their life, something you do not get back. When any reasonable, informed person recognizes that if you have a cause, if you think that things are bad, if you think that people are acting in a manner that is inappropriate, there's a powerful tool that you can use. Words. Reveal evidence and reason. Do the kinds of things that we're doing in this program. As my wife and I always said to our children when they got frustrated and did things that were inappropriate in terms of response to something they may not have liked, our instruction to them was always, use your words. It is so much a better choice than what religious people have a tendency to do. The monks who whose reports identify as, well, we don't even need to know their names, it is irrelevant, they didn't care enough for their own lives to live them. Why do we want to memorialize them by repeating their names? Most involved Buddhist monks are nuns, who are now called Tibetan activists. They are burning themselves alive because they are requesting greater religious freedom. And they're calling for the return of their spiritual leader who has been exiled, the Dalai Lama. Now, how is death freedom? I guess death is freedom from life. But in death, there is no religion. If you're religious, death will be the end of your existence. And what difference, really, is it if the religious icon known as the Dalai Lama is in Tibet or if he is in Boston? What really is the difference? If you think that he is somehow a superior individual who has superior intellect, who has superior insights, then what would stop you from studying what he has to say, from believing what he has to say, if he is speaking in Boston versus Burma? Does it really make any difference where he physically is? Or do you think that he is this enlightened, somehow spiritual envoy of the non-God? I mean, Buddhism doesn't even have a God. You know, Buddha didn't talk about a path to God. He talked about a path to nothing. A total how to live your life in such a way that you don't irritate anyone, including yourself. So why, what is the point? Yes, Scott.
Which technically would make everything that he said true to people. Because if you don't know God, yes, you have nothing.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you just end, and you get exactly what you wanted.
Yeah, that's why I kind of get a chuckle out of Buddhism. Buddhism is the only religion where the devotees actually get what they're seeking. You see, what Scott is talking about here, and many of our listeners know, that the Christian and Islamic myths that all souls either go to heaven or hell is wrong. If God were to say, love me or I'm going to torture you forever, in hell he would be sadistic. And he doesn't say that in his Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. God makes it very clear the vast preponderance of human souls simply cease to exist at the end of their mortal lives. There is no punishment. There is no reward. They did not know God. God does not know them. They get what Buddha promised, the ultimate state of non-existence, total and complete nothingness. They don't irritate anybody, and they aren't irritated by anyone. And so with Buddhism, if you are a Buddhist who is not trying to promote your religion but just live it, then you will get exactly what your prophet, if you will, promised. So it is the one religion that actually delivers on its promise. Now, the foreign media are banned from this region because the Chinese government accuses the Dalai Lama of orchestrating protests. It is, of course, a charge which he denies. He's living a real fine life. You know, he's got all these Hollywood types and rich types paying him for his, just to be around them as a spiritual leader. He's, you know, he's looked at kind of as this individual who stands above the crowd because he's so spiritual. And, you know, the last thing he really wants is to go back there and have to live a life that matters. The Chinese government knows that he is not in any way, shape, or form encouraging these people to set themselves on fire. But nonetheless, the Chinese government, being communist, wishes to control the media, and therefore media is not allowed into this region of China known as Tibet. In January, this article says China found two men guilty of inciting emulations, and it was the first case since the legal ruling stipulating that anyone aiding in emulations would be charged with murder. It gets right back to if somebody wants to take their own life, they ought to be able to. If they wish to take out others in the process, then it should be considered murder. There was a story, now switching gears here, and this is a major switch. I have no thoughtful transition here other than to tell you this, that this was an article that I plucked out of the media about 2.5 weeks ago, read it, and was just flabbergasted as to the kind of behavior that was on display here. So let me share a little bit of the article and we can talk about it. Teachers incensed, enraged, if you will, by sweeping education reforms have attacked the buildings of political parties in Mexico's southwestern Guerrero state. Massed protesters started fires and attacked the offices with pickaxes and sticks, spraying slogans on the wall. So, in this southwestern region, this Guerrero state of Mexico, there were some educational reforms that were passed, and the teachers decided that they didn't want to use their words either, and that they didn't, of course, want to set themselves on fire, so they set the school administration buildings and the buildings of those in politics who manage and run and set the policy for schools on fire. Now, the reforms imposed centralized teacher assessment and seek to end corrupt practices in the educational system. So what the teachers were opposing is the notion that their performance would be assessed. Now, my view here is, since teachers seem so opposed to being assessed, that they ought to be paid at a level that is commiserate with someone whose job performance is never considered. And therefore, the current salaries of teachers in some states, which average six figures, ought to be adjusted downward substantially. Because in private practice, people are evaluated every day.
Making the right...
Welcome back to Shattering This. I'm your host, Yetta. You can engage in this discussion by calling 877-300-7645. So the teachers' unions, which inspired the revolts, and let's keep in mind that the union mindset, those who are zealously pro-union, are very often socialist, secular, humanists. They are very often wrapped up in the religion of man. They are political to the point where their political zeal has a religious fervor to it. So this would be somewhat similar to the Buddhist misbehavior, inability to think morally and rationally or appropriately, because just as Buddhism doesn't have a god, the religion of socialist secular humanism doesn't have a god either, unless you consider man to be the god of humanism. And I think that's a reasonable conclusion. So the teachers' unions in Mexico decided that the decision to assess, to evaluate teachers, was so egregious that the appropriate response was to turn teachers into criminals so that they would become arsonists. The unions say that these reforms could lead to big layoffs, which is to say that the teachers that are part of our union are so pathetic, they're so lazy, they're so unqualified, that should they be evaluated, they would be fired. And so they are also saying that these reforms could pave the way for privatization of Mexico's educational system. Now just think, in America, if schools were privatized, if every parent had a choice of where they sent their child to school. Schools had to compete, demonstrating which ones could perform most effectively on behalf of those students, providing them not only with a first-rate education so that they might progress in school and in life, but also providing a kind of an environment where they become a well-rounded individual, an individual that is exposed to things like music, to rhetoric, to athletic opportunities, where the schools are positive, nurturing environments that influence the children in a way that their opportunities in life are enhanced. Competition. Can you imagine how vastly superior not only the schools would be, but the options would be for parents? But parents says, you know, I don't want to go to a school, my child to go to a school that takes this approach of we ought to tolerate and accept all manner of things, even if they're vicious. I don't want my child to go to a school that is managed on the basis of political correctness, because that's what we have with government schools, both in Europe, the United States, and in Mexico. With government schools that are controlled by the unions and politicians, what we end up is with a monochromatic kind of thought process. They're all socialist, secular, humanist. They're all politically correct. They all adhere to the religion of man. It's the same mantra, there is no choice. So imagine, choice. It'd be a powerful, powerful thing. And it would be a vastly more efficient. I mean, if you look at the way that UPS and Federal Express are run compared to the way the U.S. Post Office is run, you quickly realize how the government monopoly and how union monopolies are crippling. The teachers, this article says, are part of the country's smaller, more radical union, the National Coordinator of Education Workers, the most destructive union in the United States is the teachers union, by far. Debilitating in terms of not only the fact that they have made public education prohibitively expensive, having increased the cost of education beyond an acceptable level, and spending some 90% of the money on teacher salaries and administrator salaries as opposed to actually improving and enhancing the implementation of tools and an environment that could actually enhance our children's minds and education. So they are not only caustic in the sense of being ungodly in terms of being inefficient and lavishing large wage increases upon themselves, particularly teachers that are tenured. But they also prohibit anyone from providing competition, whether it be a voucher system, a private option versus the public option, or any teacher not advancing socialist, secular humanism.
Gardeners.
I'm your host, Yada. You can participate in this discussion by calling 877-300-7645. It's stunning here that in Mexico, those who decided that the proper response to assessing their ability, their performance, was to take picks and axe and torches to burn buildings, that they are the ones who want to have a monopoly to educate Mexico's youth, and that the government allows that. It is also amazing that the union spokesperson who would talk to reporters regarding the violent protests simply said, oh, they were nothing more than a reaction to the aggressive policies that are being imposed by the reforms. And that's why this sort of action came against those parties. So the aggressiveness wasn't those carrying picks and axes and Molotov cocktails. No. The aggressiveness was those politicians who says, maybe we should have teachers be accountable. That was what was aggressive. The local politician says we need to avoid the law of the jungle imposing itself, the chaos of the breakdown of public order. It's amazing that those who want an absolute exclusive on bending your child's mind respond in this manner. There's a story out of Washington that is about 10 days old that I want to share with you because it shows how misled we are and how incompetent the American government is, how just utterly ignorant and irrational and immoral we have become. The article reads, the United States is rethinking its opposition to arming the Syrian rebels, President Barack Obama's defense chief said on Thursday. This would be a week ago. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel cautioned that giving weapons to the forces fighting President Bashar al-Assad was only one option being considered, although it's being considered. It carries, of course, the risk of these arms finding their way into the hands of anti-American extremists among the insurgents such as the Nusra Front. Well, the Nusra Front happens to be by far the largest militant group that comprises the Rebel Alliance. And they are not extremists, they are fundamentalists. They are Salaf Muslims, Sunni Salaf Muslims, as fundamentalist as they could possibly be. And if weapons, and when, it's not if, America is supplying weapons to the rebels, not directly, we do it indirectly, we do it through Qatar and Saudi Arabia, but there are weapons that are being funneled through Qatar and Saudi Arabia. And Qatari and Saudi Arabian preference is that the most fundamental, the more fundamental is the Muslim, the better. And so the Nusra Front is, in fact, the primary beneficiary. So Hagel says, you know, that we're going to look at all of these options. The president said, hey, we're going to look before we leap, because he was speaking about the fact that Israel came up with the realization through photographic evidence and through its embedded agents, Mossad agents in Syria, that sarin gas was being used. And the Israelis proved it. They showed photographic evidence that civilians in Syria had been poisoned with sarin gas. They did not, however, say that the sarin gas was being deployed by Assad or Assad's forces. They just said it's being used. The United States feeling inadequate, the CIA saying, oh, well, you know, we're smart, too. We have intelligence, too, came out and said, yeah, well, we've come to the conclusion that the sarin gas was deployed by Assad's forces. And then I Love a War McCain came out and says, well, then that's the red line. We need to jump in and involve American troops. But come to find out, according to the United Nations, the chemical weapons, the sarin, was deployed by the rebels. Shows you just how misguided we are. And so, can you imagine? The United States is considering arming now those who deployed the chemical weapon. We are a lost, lost nation. There have been a series of interesting hearings. Yesterday was theater for those who are the least bit concerned about the integrity of their government. Now, yesterday it broke down because of the hearings. You had three men who are career State Department attachés and employees, high-ranking State Department members, who were in Libya at the time of the Benghazi attacks, who were testifying before Congress. And the administration, being Democratic and the Democratic Party in Congress, wanted to make it seem like these three men were political hacks, their political affiliation was not disclosed, that they were political hacks, and the entire purpose of this was to attacked the President of the United States and the Democratic Party, and that it was all being done for political purposes. As Hillary Clinton said, you know, the men are dead. What difference does it make? Well, what difference it makes is if Americans were actually educated and Americans were actually moral, the President of the United States would be impeached based upon what happened in Benghazi. The current head of the UN mission in Benghazi was one of those who testified. He talked to the former, the now dead, late U.S. Secretary, Ambassador, excuse me, to Libya, after he had been wounded, but before he died. And he conveyed the realization that the mission in Benghazi, it's not the embassy, because the embassy is in Tripoli, but the mission in Benghazi was under attack. And it was immediately known that the attack was perpetrated by, and we have cables that came from and telephone calls coming from the State Department identifying the attackers as Ansar al-Sharia. Ansar al-Sharia means friends of Sharia law, fundamentalist Muslims. There was absolutely no spontaneous protest based upon the YouTube video, Innocence of Muslims, in Benghazi that night. And the men who perpetrated the attack, the members of Ansar al-Sharia, were armed to the teeth with American weapons. Rocket-propelled grenades, 50-caliber machine guns, and automatic rifles. And yet, knowing this, the President of the United States deliberately and purposefully lied, as did Rice, his lead media spokesperson at the time. They knew the truth. They were informed. They knew exactly what happened. Even when the mission was attacked, the President of the United States, rather than staying up and saying, what can we do to help, told those who could have helped to stand down. And then he went to sleep. And yet, the next day when he decides to tell the story, and even 2 weeks later he goes to the United Nations to tell the story, he continues to blame it on a movie. And if you listen to Rice during her meetings with the press, she talks about this awful, terrible, hateful movie. And it being the cause. They deliberately and purposefully lied. And they did so for weeks thereafter. It's pathetic. The senior man at the time who talked to the ambassador just before his death and is now the senior person there, was number two at the time. When he heard Rice on the television shows the next day, he said his jaw dropped. He was embarrassed for his country. And yet I listened to a bit to Rush Limbaugh yesterday talk about this, and Rush Limbaugh just must have told 8 or 9 callers, listen, I don't know why he did these things. I have no clue as to why Obama responded this way. And yet it's so obvious. Obama's entire mindset is that he needs to advance a war on extremism. He has relabeled the war against fundamentalist Muslims a war against extremism. And he views Christians as extremists. He views political conservatives as extremists. He views anyone who says that the government should not be trusted as an extremist. And so by blaming the murder of the American ambassador and 3 others on extremism, which was an absolute and complete lie, he got the political edge that he was looking for. But yet it was an outright lie. And he knew it was a lie. Hi, Larry. I understand that you've called in as I switch the topic to what happened in Benghazi and the hearings, which were... I tore your heart out yesterday to listen to not only the testimony of those who were there, who who witnessed their friends and comrades die because America was unwilling to protect them, even when it had the opportunity and was called to protect them, was told to stand down, and then to find the president and his aides deliberately lying about what happened, listening to their testimony, and then listening to the senators try to belittle these men.
Well, I don't think that's really designed to get at the truth. I think that's a dog and pony show designed to get people in a rah-rah state. Our side got you back, you know, kind of thing. I don't think at all that those are designed to get to the truth. I mean, you had a fourth witness involved that wasn't allowed to speak because of some red tape that didn't get cleared up. Yeah. You know, if we're trying to get to the truth, why don't we get to the truth? And I think,
but the witnesses there, Larry, they got to. I mean, they exposed the fact that the attack was by Ansar al-Sharia, which is a fundamentalist Islamic group, not associated with al-Qaeda, just a fundamentalist Islamic group, that they had planned the attack and that there was no protest outside. There was no association with the movie of any kind.
That both and Obama and Hillary lied, both of them.
And Rice
went out and lied.
Correct.
You know,
and that they chose not to protect American personnel when they had the opportunity to do so. That is the truth that has come out. It just, what are Americans going to do with it? If this same story came out and it was a Republican in the White House, he'd be impeached. The media would not let go of it.
You want me to take a stab? Nothing's going to happen. Nothing.
Correct. We'll be back in a moment.
Sweet.
Welcome back to Shattering Mists. I'm your host, Yetta. We're here with Larry calling in from Florida. And, Larry, I think you're right. Nothing's going to happen. And yet, the story that has come out of Washington yesterday is the story that we knew way back during the time of the election, which is that the embassy was attacked not as a result of a spontaneous outpouring against an anti-Islamic film, which, by the way, does present Muhammad accurately as a mass murderer and as a sexual pervert. He was both of those things. They are undeniable. It was not a response to that, which would have been wholly inappropriate had it even been a response to that, but that it was, in fact, planned by Ansar al-Sharia. Ansar in Arabic is friends and supporters. It is a highly charged religious term. When Muhammad went to Yathrib, today's Medina, after being booted out of Mecca for the satanic verses, took some Meccans with him, brought some Meccans along with him. The Meccans were considered superior to those Arabs living in Yathrib, and so the Arabs living in Yathrib got the term helper. They were the subordinates, if you will. And so Ansar in Arabic and in Islam means the supporters or the helpers. And al-Sharia is Sharia law. It's the law that is comprised of Muhammad's words and deeds. There are five texts that comprise the reservoir of knowledge regarding Muhammad's words and deeds. They're all hadith. One of them is the Quran, and then there is Bukhari's and Muslim's hadith collections by topic, and then Ishaq's biography collection of hadith that form a biography, and Tabari's collections of hadith that are comprised into a history of Islam's beginnings. They are the reservoir of information that is used to create Sharia law, which is based upon Muhammad's words and deeds. And Muhammad was a rapist. He was a pedophile. He was a mass murderer. He was a kidnapper. He was a slave trader. He was a sexual pervert. And so it is a legal system based upon his life.
Yeah, that could be one of the reasons that you don't arm Syrian rebels with the weapons that were first sent to Libya, which is what the ambassador was doing over there. And, you know, I mean, if I was a real cynic, I would say he was a loose end that needed to be tied up. And that's why one might watch an eight-hour firefight and pretend it's not going on and order everybody to stand down. I mean, I'm just saying, if I were cynical, I might say that.
Yeah. At the very best way you can spin this is the President of the United States was briefed that his mission in Benghazi was under attack, that it had 160 militants, Mujahideen, jihadists, enraged in it, and he went to sleep. And not only that, his Secretary of State told the Marines who could have come to the defense of the embassy to stand down. The mission to stand down. That's the very best spin you can put on that part of it. And then on the other part of it, the best spin that you could possibly put on it is that the President of the United States thought that Americans would not care enough to investigate or even consider the truth that the crime was perpetrated by a fundamentalist Islamic group with no association with Al-Qaeda and no association with a film, and that that group used American weapons to kill the American ambassador because Islam is wholly opposed to America and to any non-Islamic entity. And therefore,
he took that story and he ran with it to the UN and he used it to advance the notions of political correctness.
Right.
And to end that discussion, he just wanted to pin it on some guy that made a film as opposed to what happened. He knew what happened.
Because the film could be easily characterized as extremist.
I think what the news that I'm getting is, you know, I mean, I seldom ever get news off, you know, network TV but I turned on O'Reilly last night, and the way O'Reilly in his no spin zone spun this was that this was obviously an embarrassment and it was, quote, mishandled.
I mean, you're talking about the President of the United States.
Talking about eight hours of a firefight where you're watching your fellow citizens get murdered is
with your weapons.
Mishandled.
With your weapons.
Mishandled.
Right. And here the president wants to view Islam as something that is good, and so he armed the people that should have been thrilled that we helped them depose their dictator when there's nothing he could have done that was worse, more suicidal for the United States. We'll be back after the commercial break.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture.